This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roisin Kennison and Noel Lim. 6 o'clock in the morning, Tuesday the 23rd of March. And how are we all today? Are we excited for the rest of the show that we
Not
have
Not bad
up?
For a Tuesday, I think.
I should expect that we have excellent shows every day, Noel. It's not just that it's
I'm
a
talking
not bad
about
for
myself. Myself being not feeling too bad.
That's good then.
Yes, always excited, Lynn. It's always an exciting day here on The Morning Run every day of the week from 6 to 10 a.m.
Because you're in the studio with me.
No, because of the content we cover, of course.
Our charming company.
I know, isn't it?
Fine. The charm does add some element of gravitas to the day. But, you know, it is the content that drives everything we do over here. And actually, I'm pretty excited about the grill I'm doing today. I'm speaking to Adobe's Managing Director for Southeast Asia, Simon Dale. And we're going to get a bit of what Adobe is doing in the region, right? Because this is one of those companies that's done really, really well over the last 5 years in the sense that I think the stock has gone up almost four and a half to five times. And they've, like Microsoft, have pivoted away from the product as a service from software as a product to software as a service, which has been an incredible moneymaker for them. But their penetration in Asia is still very low. They only represent 16% of the $13 billion they made last year. So it'll be interesting to see whether they've got any tangible strategies to break into the Southeast Asian market, especially with piracy so rampant here a lot of the time.
And if you're interested in learning more about that, you can tune in later on for the Breakfast Grill after the 8 o'clock news bulletin. But in the meantime, let's take a look at what we have on the cards for you in this next hour. Noel, later on after the 6:30 news, what are we going to be covering?
International stories. So we're going to look at the Uyghurs. Western countries may be sanctioning China over rights abuses. And still on China, something about South China Sea and some updates on the vaccine.
All right, great. That's going to be after the 6:30 news. And in about 10 minutes or so, Roisin, what do we have?
My favorite topic. We're going to talk about money. We're going to talk about financial independence and what that means, right? And this is something that's very interesting because financial independence means different things to different people. Oftentimes it gets wrapped up in the whole FIRE movement thing, which is like people wanting to retire at 40. But financial independence can be retiring at 65 or never retiring, just making sure you have a nest egg to keep you going for the rest of your life. But yeah, we'll discuss all this and what it means to each of us in the room a little later.
And if you want to weigh in on the conversation as well, you can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, though, we're going to be looking at ways to hack your focus and motivation. So be sure to stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Thorn in My Side by the Eurythmics. And you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roisin and Noel. So, you know, I think all of us have found ourselves in the situation where something, you know, you may be caught in a crisis situation at work. Your emails are blowing up, chat messages are just rolling in. And rather than dealing with all of the influx of information and demands of your attention, we find ourselves gravitating to things that are maybe a little bit easier to handle, like
Netflix,
Twitter,
eating ice cream,
YouTube, cat videos, things like that. Right? Noel, it sounds like you're talking from experience there.
No, because Noel posted something on Instagram the other day about, I think it was someone who, it was a comic of someone who had passed, and when they were asked what they did with their lives, it was basically Netflix.
Yeah, so this was a comic of this person in heaven, Pearly Gates, and then when Judgment Day, right? So do you do anything bad? No. Do you do anything good? No. And then the person who did the judging asked, where have you been? And he said, Netflix.
I will tell you this. It made me think for a second. I was like, because coincidentally, I was watching Netflix at that very moment.
It did a bit. I also had Netflix open on another tab when I saw that. So, you know, it just goes to show how much these distractions can very easily take over your life. And we're not talking about that. We're not talking about that comic. We're talking about this habit of ours, right? To default to things that are perhaps a little bit more palatable to our you know, this article in Fast Company makes the case that it's more palatable to your sense of self-confidence rather than, because we know that you know, procrastinating in these manners is not efficient, it's not productive. And yet, why do we do it? So this article is an interesting one. It talks about self-efficacy, which is a psychological concept relating to how much you believe that you will be able to navigate a difficult situation and overcome potential obstacles. It all comes down to confidence. Do you have that confidence that you can weather an unexpected challenge?
Right, because this is a new concept, or at least if I did learn about it, I have forgotten completely about it, right? And I've just pulled up a definition here, and this is based on work from psychologist Albert Bandura, who originally proposed the concept. And basically, self-efficacy is a personal judgment on how well or poorly a person is able to cope with a given situation based on the skills they have and the circumstances they face. This reminds me a lot of the flow state, or the ability to achieve flow state, right? It's the Goldilocks zone. What can you find a state where it's not too much to it's not too much of a challenge, but also not too little of an endeavor to keep you challenged, but also engrossed in the activity? But it's related, but slightly different. Because the flow state is about achieving optimal work product, right? This is really just about your self-belief in whether you can get the thing done. And that procrastination essentially stems from from low self-efficacy, because you don't believe you can do it, because you don't, it's not necessarily that you don't like it, but you feel like it's too high a bar and things like that. So it's very, very, very interesting article.
Yeah, so I think what happens here is when we avoid doing something and we zone out and prefer to binge watch on Netflix is because we want to avoid the unpleasant feelings of getting on with that main task that we are supposed to do. Like, you know, the unpleasant feelings could be, you know, worry whether we can get it done, or even just going to the gym, right? Just the physical pain, you know, the stretching of the muscle can be quite painful, and we just want to avoid all that because our minds are just predisposed to avoiding unpleasantness. So I think to increase self-efficacy, I think there are some suggestions here that are listed out by Fast Company. I think it's about returning your attention to something, that the task that you're supposed to do. Every time the mind wanders, just bring it back to that task that you're working on, right? So in that sense, you don't start wondering and then, you know, having self-doubts and so forth. And also just bring a sense of kindness to what you're doing. Like, it's okay to have setbacks, right? It's okay to fail, and to say, just be gentle with yourself. And I think there are some suggestions here. And also just accepting that it's okay to feel discouraged. It's okay to feel unpleasant about the whole situation or what you're trying to achieve.
Yeah, I think those two points there are really important, Noel, because one, the kindness element is essentially setting realistic expectations for yourself, right? So let's use the gym metaphor for a second. If you go into the gym and expect to be able to run 6 minute kilometers, you're setting yourself up for failure, right? But if you go in there and say, hey, I'm just going to walk on the treadmill and aim for like 14 minute kilometers, which are very doable, you start building small wins for yourself, because you don't want you don't want the taste of defeat to define your work. You don't want the taste of defeat to be what you associate with when you do this activity, because that's what's going to make you avoid it, right? Mm-hmm. And this is, I'm talking from personal experience here as well. This is why I find James Clear's Atomic Habits, that book, phenomenally powerful in terms of getting us to do things. And the other one is, what was the other point you mentioned? The other one, I've lost track of my...
Accepting that it's okay to feel unpleasant. Yes, like if you have anxiety or you have self-doubt, it's okay to feel all that and to just move along.
And there's the thing, we create this environment where everything needs to be, we believe that everything needs to be done right on the first time and that failure is unacceptable. But that's not true. We all make mistakes all the time. It's about whether you can bounce back from it and move forward.
And the funniest thing is that, you know, if you were speaking to someone else, you know, an external person, and this person was failing on the first try, a lot of the times we would say to them, it's okay, you know, it's fine.
We
don't say that to ourselves. We are extremely unkind to ourselves when it comes to, whether it's going to the gym, whether it's trying something new at work. So a lot of the times we set ourselves, we hold ourselves to an unreasonable standard. And there is also the element that this article mentions, which is being aware of your existing emotional and psychological state. Because it points out that it is very difficult to, have that positive, efficient, focused mindset. If you're in a state where you're very anxious, if you're in a state where, you know, work is very stressful, you are hitting burnout, how are you going to be? It's easy to say, okay, you know, I need to be positive about this task that I'm doing. But if everything around you is, you know, you feel is like conspiring to make you unhappy, then that's quite a tall order in and of itself.
Yeah, this is a great article. I really recommend you check it out. We're going to be tweeting it out a little bit. over at BFM Radio. If you liked it, retweet it, quote retweet, tell us what you thought about it. Because I really feel that this is something that should be shared, right? Because it really gives sets context for each of us. Because we do live in an environment, while we in the room here say that we would tell someone else that it's okay, we do live in an environment that expects a lot out of people around us, because maybe because of unreal working expectations. And that can create a toxic environment because you have no context, right? Mm-hmm. This maybe can help you start bridging that at least the mental gap there and prepare you psychologically.
And let us know what you think about this over on Twitter at BFM Radio, or you can WhatsApp us as well, 018-789-8899. Up next, though, we're going to be taking a look at financial independence and what it means to you. So be sure to stay tuned for that after these messages. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Lonely Boy by the Black Keys, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roshan and Noel. So the next story that has crossed our desks this morning is this one in marketwatch.com, and it's about a man who became financially independent at 36, and he says the key to this is owning your own time. So, you know, he's an interesting chap. He has, I think he was a former IT consultant, if I'm not mistaken. Now he's basically his time is spent managing a couple of rental properties, traveling with his partner and their dog, a few other side hustles, and he also herds sheep. So, you know, this is an interesting, he's an interesting character. Roshan, since financial independence is really, you know, you love to talk about this, why don't you tell us a little bit more about this story?
I like talking about money, Lynn, not necessarily financial independence all the time. Actually, financial independence is an interesting thing, right? Because I'm also trying to wrap my head around what it means to me. And it's very important to take note, right? Because even though we're talking about this guy, it's a very personal decision, right? Personal finance is very personal. So if your goal is to hit 40 years old and become financially independent and insured, I just couldn't separate the two words. But essentially, if you want to do that, then you have to set yourself up in a way that you can achieve that, right? And the reason he can do it is because he bought property, he's getting rental from it. That's not necessarily risk-free either, yes. But it's something that's worth it to him. That's the key thing to note here, right? He wants to herd sheep. He wants to have rental property. He wants that freedom. He wants to own his time in that sense. There are some other people who may find that way too open-ended for them. And the responsibility to manage rental property, which is also incumbent on the owner, right? You could suffer loss from that. That becomes also maybe too much uncertainty. So you got to really know yourself. But it is a great story, right? Essentially, he's defined financial independence as the ability to own his own time and basically work his own hours and walk around with his dog. That's basically what it comes down to here. But for me, the way I look at it is like, I want to try and build up that, whether it's a retirement fund or not, but build up a sum of capital so that by the time I'm like 55 or something like that, I can not stop working, but I don't see myself stopping working, but I can do things that I want to do, right? Do projects that work for me and feel like they have more synergy with the values and things like that, you know. So continuing to work, but not having the pressure to have to work. I think that's what financial independence means to me.
At this point, FIRE, or financial independence, retire early, is really very important for me. And so because, you know, money you can earn back, right? But time, once it's gone, it's gone. And you just cannot earn it back. And so with that kind of thinking and mindset, it shapes your plan how you want to, you know, retire early, right? So your plan then is not about, you know, always spending your time working, but, you know, you may spend your time investing instead. You know, there's a shift in how you want to spend your time. So in this case, he obviously had a plan. One, he was flipping real estate, and then he was making money through rental as a landlord. And he's also investing in the stock market for dividends, I assume, and maybe capital gains. And I think thirdly, it's very important. It also starts with a savings plan, right? Because every penny saved is earned. So at least if you have very limited resources, start with a savings plan and then moving on to how you can build up your investments. And it will also shape the kind of investments that you buy, like, you know, certain stocks, maybe just more dividend yielding kind of stocks.
And he also talks about, you know, the ways to manage some of his ways to manage his budget. And the big one here that I think we're all aware of, but we don't always like to acknowledge, is that convenience is a huge budget killer, right? Because a lot of the times we are time poor and we spend as a result on the convenience of having, a fully prepared meal delivered to your doorstep, because we may not necessarily have the time or energy to cook on our own. But you also have to acknowledge that there has to be a balance if saving money is also your goal at the same time, because at the end of the day, you are paying quite a premium for that convenience.
Correct. Cost is not just about the money you pay, right? There is time cost, there is effort, there's always this concept of you focus on your job and then you pay other people to do other things, right? And that's the specialist economy and the trickle-down effect and all things like that. And it's easy to say things like that. And that's one thing in this article that I found quite like, it's what he believes, and it's fine because he's got time and he's got low expenses. He's living $27,000 a year. That's the way he's looking at it. But to a lot of people, maybe the opportunity cost of spending time cooking food doesn't make sense because they make more money with the time that they spent that they would have spent doing that, or they just can't afford to do it. These are all very real world things. And when we talk about financial independence or even the FIRE movement, where people want to retire at 40, that's not for everyone, because that requires you earning a really high income from a young age. You can talk about saving 70 and 80%, but saving 70 and 80% of a $10,000 salary a month is a big, is a lot easier than saving 70-80% out of 4,000 ringgit a month.
But so, trust me, the people who are earning at 10,000 ringgit will say, people earning 20,000 ringgit is easier for them to save money. It's always going to be relative. So it's very intentional. We have to make that decision quite intentionally. This is what we want, retire early to have all these options.
Yeah, but there's always, after a certain point of income, then you can start talking about saving money, right? Because you can only save so much. You can only cut costs to zero. Below that, you can't do anything else, And to a lot of people who live, I think the median salary in Malaysia right now is 3,300 ringgit. And if you're living on your own, it's going to be tough because the BNM's own, what was it? They had a living wage number was 2,700 ringgit. I think it was 1-2 years ago. So it's very important to take your own context in mind and redefine what financial independence means for you. You can live by other people's. I mean, we talked about self-efficacy earlier, right? Mm-hmm. You can kind of relate it there because you don't want to set yourself up for failure as well.
Yeah, and it's important to also think about the lifestyle that you have, what kind of a lifestyle you are willing to have in order to, if your goal is to retire early, achieve financial independence by 35 or what have you. Because a lot of people, decide that, I'm going to save money to the exclusion of all else. And you have to acknowledge that does come with an emotional toll, right? You may not be able to spend time going out with friends. You may not be able to buy that, one small thing that's going to make you happy.
Yeah, one thing that strikes me about this story, Market Watch story here, this guy is not on his own, right? He has a partner. And I think this is very important. The partner has to agree with your choice of lifestyle and financial goals.
That's very true. So let us know what you think about this. What does financial independence mean for you? You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. We've got the 6:30 news bulletin coming up, and to take you there is Crash by The Primitives, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Praise You by Fatboy Slim, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kanisen, and Noel Lim. So at this time of the morning, we usually turn our attention to interesting international stories. And first on our list is the fact that several Western countries have imposed sanctions on officials in China over alleged rights abuses against the Uyghur minority group in the northwest region of Xinjiang. So these sanctions were introduced as a coordinated effort by the European Union, the UK, the US, as well as Canada. And China has, of course, responded with its own sanctions on European officials and denied the allegations of abuse.
So the sanctions include travel bans and asset freezes targeting senior officials in Xinjiang who have been accused of serious human rights violations against the Uyghurs. So some of the targeted names like Chen Mingguo, the director of the Xinjiang Public Security Bureau, and then another member of the Xinjiang's community Communist Party Standing Committee, and also the party secretary of the Xinjiang Production and Construction Company. So I think the Europeans have described the Uyghur Muslims, the abusers, are one of the worst human rights crisis of our time. I think, you know, there's been some accusations that the Uyghurs are sent to a camp, almost like a concentration camp.
China calls them re-education
camps.
Yeah,
calls them re-education. But, you know, there has been some accounts of abuses, sexual abuses as well.
Yeah, this has been one of those hot spot points, right, when it comes to U.S.-China tensions, especially now with the Biden administration and Blinken leading the State Department. They're pivoting away from the economic focuses as opposed to the tit-for-tat tariffs and the technology war over to the human rights concerns. And, I mean, if we take a look at this statement from the U.S. Secretary of State, Anthony Blinken, he said that China was committing, in quotes here, genocide and crimes against humanity. So he didn't hold back words. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he didn't hold back the sentiment that they're putting down here. Because, right? You know, before this, there was a bit of like eggshells, you know, you kind of pick your fights with China. Even if you're the superpower of the world, you don't want to go to all out, but they're making a statement here, and they've rallied the allies in this, on this cause as well. And it'll be interesting to see how China frames this as well, because they're probably going to frame it as a attack on them, and the Western powers are using colonial influences to
infringing upon their sovereignty,
Their sovereignty and impose their values, and etc., etc.
This certainly is a turn in terms of China's foreign relations, because the EU hasn't imposed new sanctions on China since 1989, after the Tiananmen Square crackdown. So how things proceed from here, considering that China is a superpower in this region, is going to be certainly very interesting to watch. But we also did have some...
So China did say something about the sanctions, and what they said were the sanctions were based on, in quotes here, on nothing but lies and disinformation.
A standard statement.
So they're just going out and saying, hey, nope, you fake news. That's the statement.
Yes. So this is one of those things, I think, that it's going to continue to be quite a hotbed of international attention. If we turn our attention, too, to the South China Sea, we also have had a bit of a flare-up in disputes here between China and the Philippines, because the Philippines' defense chief, Delfin Lorenzana, has demanded that more than 200 Chinese vessels, which were manned by militia, he demanded that they leave a South China Sea reef claimed by Manila, saying that their presence was, and I quote, a provocative action of militarizing the area.
So now this will be interesting to see how the U.S. responds, right? Because now they're saying they're going to be more involved in the region, and the South China Sea is a particular... it's full of disputes. And I think Lynn can educate us in terms of the ramifications and implications of all of this, right? Because the nine dash line has rubbed people the wrong way in terms of what China is saying is theirs in terms of maritime waters and more.
Yeah, China says the entirety of the nine dash line, which consists of 90% of the South China Sea, is theirs by right of ancient history. Ancient historical documents do dispute that, including Chinese maps themselves from about the 1600s. I wrote a paper on this, guys. This
fantastic.
I can talk about it for a long time.
Give you 1 hour to talk about it.
One more thing, though, because not all countries call it the South China Sea, right, Lynn?
No. The Philippines at one point changed its name to the West Philippine Sea. Vietnam calls it the East Sea. In fact, I think we only started calling it the South China Sea maybe in the last 150 years or so.
I think we should have a Today I learned every day on the morning run. And today I learned this.
Well. Yeah, so before that, it was just called the East Sea in early Portuguese maps.
Yeah, I think one of the complication here is that our fortunes, Southeast Asian countries' fortunes, are so closely tied to China, mm-hmm. right? So the Philippines is now speaking up on this particular piece of news. And I don't blame the Philippines. I know they depend so much on Chinese investments for their infrastructure needs as well as for trade. So, you know, so economics is now tied closely to politics. So U.S. has to intervene, but I think Southeast Asian countries also may have to, you know, take a more aggressive stance, perhaps.
Yes, and it's going to be interesting to see what Rodrigo Duterte does as well in regards to China, because since he came to power, the rhetoric coming out of the Philippines towards China, particularly since they were so heavily involved in like the arbitration over the South China Sea, it has toned down significantly as Duterte kind of made nice a bit with China because of their infrastructure, you know, possibilities. So whether or not this is going to re-inflame tensions is going to be certainly very interesting to watch out for. There's a very good book by Bill Hayton called The South China Sea, The Struggle of Power of Asia. Yes. It's a good read if you're interested in learning more about the history of this situation. But right now we're about to head into some messages. And then after that, we're going to be taking a look at our own local papers and portals. So be sure to stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Sweet Disposition by The Temper Trap. And you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Roshan and Noelle. So just before we get into our local papers and portals this morning, we've got a WhatsApp in from Arya Ratnam, who was weighed in on the financial independence discussion we were having. He says, as a senior citizen, financial independence means a lot to me and my wife. So is being functionally independent. That's equally important, so we don't have to depend on others, be it family or friends, to continue to live out our ordinary and fruitful lives. And I think that really is the key here, right? Because once you also get to a certain age, a lot of the times when you are hitting retirement, the next 20 or 30 years, the thing that a lot of people really want to maintain is their independence. Not many people want to move in with their children, or in this country as well, and in most Asian countries, we do have a stigma against homes as well. We don't have the same kind of retirement villages as they do in the US. So maintaining that independence for yourself, for your partner, does come with a financial cost. So
I can see myself in 10 years' time, 20 years' time, or 25 years' time moving into one of these homes. They can be quite lovely if built correctly.
I think they're building these kind of villages in Malaysia now. I think
in Perak, that's one.
It's Perak, that's one. But I think also in East Malaysia, mm-hmm. they're building up some of these. And if I'm not mistaken, they're Australian developers, because Australia has quite a few of these as well. Yeah, so it's quite interesting, but it's a great comment there, right?
Yep.
Because, and this is why, sorry about that, and this is why it's so important to think about what financial independence means to you. And that is a brilliant way of how they've defined it for themselves, right? They want to not just be financially independent, but also functionally independent. And that's a great way. Thank you so much for sending in that message. We're taking a look at the papers right now, and I'm going to start off with a bit of news over at Maxis, because it looks like there's been a change of chairmanship over at the company. Mogzani Mahathir will be succeeding Arshad Rajatun Uda as the new chairman of Maxis. This the telco put out in a statement, and this will come into effect from April 22nd. Raja Arshad is stepping down after serving as chairperson for 11 years upon the conclusions of the company's AGM. And, he's been on the board. He's been chairman since the listing on Bursa Malaysia in 2009. But he will continue to serve as an independent non-executive director of Maxis. And also partially the reason why I bring this up is because we had Maxis on the breakfast grill yesterday. And you can find that conversation on the Breakfast Grill on the BFM app or wherever you listen to podcasts. The title of that chat is Competition is Tough, but Will 5G Help? And Wong Xiaoning spoke to Gokhan Ogut, the CEO of Maxis, about this. It was a fascinating conversation and shed some light into the tough operating landscape that a lot of telcos go through right now.
So in the newspapers, I have the NST, not so great news, and this news is carried in all mainstream newspapers. Three foreign construction workers were killed on the spot when a gantry crane component collapsed at the Sungai Besi Ulu Klang Elevated Expressway, or SUK, near Puncak Banyan, Pasaran Alam Damai. I think that's the Cheras area. So the incident, which saw two other foreign workers safe but injured a car driver, occurred while maintenance works were being conducted. And as I understand, that part of that highway gets really jammed up, and residents around that vicinity also have expressed safety concerns. like, for example, works are being carried out in the morning. But I guess, you know, it's just a very complicated situation, right? Daytime, you carry out the works, but if you do the work at night, it may be very noisy, right? So it will also disrupt the lives of residents living in that area. So hopefully, you know, there'll be more safety standards imposed or better enforcement.
Yeah, and if I'm not mistaken, I think this is the front page story on almost all the papers, mm-hmm. Whether the main one or a sidebar. Lynn, what is the headline on the Star?
Surprise, surprise. It is the accident on the Souk. Mm. And the headline here is one time too many, because we have had several accidents over the past couple of months involving these, you know, heavily constructed areas, new highways that are going up in central parts of the city, mind you. So these are very crowded suburban and urban areas. So an accident like this, where we have, and considering that we also do have massive traffic jams in the area, they can pose a very grave danger to the surrounding residents, to the surrounding even car operators. So, you know, I was seeing on social media comments, things like, you know, people just generally being almost afraid now to even drive past construction areas for fear of another accident like this happening.
Yeah, and the Malaysian Reserve on the sidebar over here, they've put the photo on the front page, and their headline here on the side is, allow independent parties to probe Souk incidences. And they're basically saying it's high time for professionals from independent parties to be involved in the probes of these incidences. And they spoke to the Malaysian Society for Occupational Safety and Health about this. And they've got to look into it, right? Because according to this, they should have learned its lessons from the three incidences that took place at the construction site within 6 months. There needs to be transparency and to tell us what's going on.
Yeah, so better news, Selangor tops the list with only 403 cases and only 5 people had died. Yesterday, I think, was our second lowest number of COVID cases, only 1,116 cases. So, you know, hopefully we are flattening the curve already, right?
Yes, but the government has also come out to say that they may consider setting a deadline for COVID-19 vaccine registrations, because I believe, the impression is that registrations can't go on forever. We must at some point set an end date. I do wonder whether that's necessarily the best way to overcome vaccine hesitancy, which is, you know, spurred by, of course, fear of side effects. So that's going to be something that we're going to be watching quite closely to see if the government does follow through with that deadline or what it intends to do otherwise. But right now we're heading into the 7 o'clock news bulletin, and to take you there is Soul Clappin' by Sly and the Family Stone, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.